Hey everyone, welcome back for another Face Rocker podcast. Today's episode, we're at number 49, getting close to 50. You're probably wondering, why is Benji staying in here? I'm wondering the same thing. I got an answer for you. Freddie, Dez, and Matt are already down in San Diego for Comic-Con this weekend. We got a bunch of cool stuff planned, so make sure you follow our Twitter and our Facebook page to see what we got planned. So you can come out, hang with the team. Anyways, we got a really cool guest for you this afternoon. We got Nick Thurston from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He plays Blue Eyes, which is one of the lead characters, and he sits down, tells us anything and everything we wanted to know about the process of filming the flick and all the new technologies they use. So it's a pretty cool cast, and we're pretty excited for it. So sit back, relax, enjoy another episode of the Face Rocker Podcast.
The best intro. Oh, it smells. The best intro so far. Welcome everybody to another Face Rocker podcast. If you haven't turned it off by this point, you certainly
should. You probably should.
What an epic way to start anything in your ears.
we're just talking about we got caught up for eating. Logan burps, drinks, and now has pizza in his lap. That's great.
We are joined by Logan, who is doing his thing usual. Matt Arnold.
Hello.
That's Dolly.
Hey, how's it going?
And a guest.
Special guest.
This is one of those guest episodes, Nick Thurston.
Hi.
Hey. You might have seen in a movie recently, but not literally. Can you tell us what people out there in audio land may have seen you in?
Yeah, so I play Blue Eyes in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and those of you guys who have seen it, that's Caesar's son. So I do a lot of Frodo-esque staring and emoting and reacting to shit.
How old are you in it?
Fucking A.
How old of a monkey are you in the movie?
That's an interesting question. So like that was something we were figuring out early on and actually kind of got changed a little bit.
Oh,
kind of a flexible thought. So obviously humans age a little bit differently than chimpanzees do. So what we wanted to go for was kind of the idea of basically what would be a 15-year-old human-ish chimp years, whatever that would be.
So you like talk in it? Like you talk?
You haven't seen it, Logan?
No.
We're going to spoil all of it for you.
We're going to spoil the whole movie for you.
Really?
Yeah.
There's monkeys in it.
Fine.
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 So you talk in it? Are you like a talkie chimp?
Yeah, kinda. So there are a few times when the apes talk in the movie. Caesar does a lot of talking. Some of the other characters do some talking. Mostly the way that we communicate is with sort of like an augmented ASL. I love the fact that there's like a dog just like cruising.
Yeah.
Just
creeping. Charlie's looking for pizza. Around.
Yeah. This part of it, it's going to be below everybody's line of sight.
Yeah, they just hear this like clacking noise.
And all our eyes are darting down occasionally.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so mostly the way that we communicated is with, we were taught when we did our sort of like intro ape camp, which we went up to Vancouver for the first month of production, and that's where we learned how to do all the movement and all the stuff like that.
So you're, are you like versed in ASL now? Like you are like have a passable sign language?
No, definitely not like versed in it, but we did learn a good amount. I mean, most of it's gone now, but like... so we learned quite a bit. And then the way that we did it is, so we broke down the entire script, sent it all to a sign language interpreter, a woman named Sherry, fantastic woman, and she sent us back videos of what the actual ASL is for those words, and then we changed some of them depending on how it fit into the environment. So for example, one of the ones that comes to mind was to hunt, which in ASL is like this,
yeah.
Like a gun. But because of where the apes are living in the film and like how we, that environment,
yeah,
that didn't make any sense. Why would, we don't use guns to hunt
right,
in our village. So
kind
we
of
changed,
point.
We simplified it, you know? So it's just like this feeling of,
sort of prowling.
Kind yeah.
Of, yeah. As opposed to like two finger guns, it's more of a crawling.
Right.
Man. Oh, interesting.
Why did you guys have to do ASL instead of voices? Like the monkeys don't have enough like voice boxes yet. Like what's the,
yeah, they evolve.
They're still working on it. It's called Dawn of the Planet.
Yeah, we're at the very beginning. It's not noon of the Planet of the Apes, Logan.
Can we talk about Monkey Camp a little bit?
Yeah, because it's funny. Because one of our friends talks about
talks about Spartan Camp when he does the 300 movies.
Oh, yeah?
And that's it's hilarious
well,
to me.
Who is
that,
it?
We have a friend who does stunts with us, a guy named Eric Linden.
Okay, who, I'm sure he knows Rich King, who did some stunts for us.
Oh, yeah, and it's always funny because he was texting us from Bulgaria, and he was like, yeah, I'm in Spartan Camp. It's pretty hilarious to me that there are apparently character camps in other countries where you go to learn things. So, can you talk a little bit about Monkey Camp in Vancouver?
Spartan Camp. That's got to be the most like bro-down situation in the entire world.
Oh, I think it's pretty brutal, actually. I assume it's just like P90X.
Well, no,
just times 100.
Not to derail, but on the topic of film camps, he was talking about, because he sent a picture back, and he's like, yo, I'm more shredded than I've ever been. And it's just like, it was like you could wash clothes on his chest. Like, just ridiculous. I'm like, what do you do every day? It's like, well, get up in the morning, protein shake, workout, fight choreography, another protein shake, lunch, chicken breast and spinach, and then more working out, and then choreography.
None of this sounds like what Spartans do.
Yeah.
This isn't Not Spartan camp. This is just like get like, jacked camp.
Kill, yeah. Like, kill babies that aren't good enough to become Spartans. Like, step one, eat your breakfast.
I was like, yeah, like, learn Latin.
Learn Latin.
Drink wine.
Greek, Logan. Come
vote.
On.
Vote.
Vote. They started.
Because every day is something.
Participate in a democracy, you know?
Well, how many people were it? Was it like all the. Because, like, yeah, when they show 300, it's like all these actors come together and get super ripped. Was it like a bunch of you guys, like, learning to be monkeys? Like,
flinging poo.
for 2 weeks.
In that vein, 60-70% of what we do.
In that vein, in that Spartan camp had nothing to do with actually being a Spartan. I assume monkey camp has very little to actually being monkeys.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. So most of it, what we did is like, we all met up in Vancouver, and we met up mostly with like our stunt team and our head movement coach, this guy named Terry Notary, who was like one of the original Cirque du Soleil cast members, and just like this fantastic movement coach and like teacher. So he kind of ran us all through this like very like new agey way of like learning how to be an ape. Like for the first like week of it, or the first like few days anyway, like we didn't even get up. Like we just like sat in a chair, and like he he would like come in, and Terry would just like come in, and just like he's got this like low like kind of like sugary voice, and he'd be like, yeah, okay, now close your eyes. Think about.
Follow along at home, folks.
Find the distance in front of you and look beyond that. See through the wall. See through the mountains in front of you. It was like, got way deep in your head. And like by the end of it, you were like, you felt like you were, you know, existing in this like world from 3 million years ago or something.
It sounds a little bit like sort of guided hypnosis stuff.
I mean, kind of. I mean, it's like very actory, to be honest. Like,
did you have any trigger words that we could use right now?
Yeah, you just suddenly woke up and you found yourself flinging poo like 3 hours later, and like that's what happened. I know you're coming to. This is like half throwing still. Like you just like slow down and look at your hands. Like, what have I done?
Sounds like MK Ultra, actually.
Yeah, a little bit.
It does.
I actually went intense, to a though. not to derail slightly. I went to a crazy guided meditation thing on Sunday.
So derailing.
So to derail.
I love how everyone calls it out before.
Not
the derail
to
podcast.
Change the subject entirely.
Yeah, also talk about something we just talked about last.
No,
podcast,
I just want. No. I just want to put it in the queue. I went and got a sound bath at a place in the desert built
what
by a guy.
What are you talking about?
No. It's called the Integratron. In the high desert.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the Integratron, man?
Totally have heard of it.
Have you ever been?
No, I've never been.
It's they always call him an aeronautical physicist, but I think it's just a dude who, who plays that business.
You just dismissed him so quickly.
He claims
anything else, just the guy.
No. In the 50s, he claimed to have been visited by aliens from Venus, and they gave him like the key to like raising humanity out of its doldrums, and he's like, I gotta build this thing. It was like an equation, and so he built it's actually acoustically perfect dome. It's almost like one of those whisper chambers. Wherever you whisper, there's like another perfect point in it. But then you can go there and get a sound bath, a 20-minute sound bath, where you go in there and they play the quartz bowls, where it does like binaural beats on your head, like wah 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 wah, where it's like the crazy like low like 20 hertz sound that you feel in your chest. As a dude's like, you know, like you're gonna separate your mind from your body, of course. That's just science. What was weird was he was like, you know, he's definitely one of those guys who's like talking about like reaching the higher plane, like very like, duh, like of course the aliens are here, come on. But he dressed like for USC people, Drew Casper. Like he had like short cropped bleached hair and a white polo shirt and white khakis. He kind of looked like a country club masseuse. But talking about this crazy stuff as he plays the quartz bowls.
So how was it?
So
the results?
Did you do it?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
And how was it?
And?
Is your chakras cleaned?
Do you separate from...
You found the Integratron?
Yeah, it's a resonant tabernacle and energy machine sited on a powerful geomagnetic vortex.
Yes.
All right.
He told me all this. Yes.
How much is it?
It's like 20 bucks.
Aliens from Venus came down and taught me how to lift humanity out of its shackles.
I'm the only human in all of human existence who have this forbidden knowledge from alien races. About 20 bucks.
You know what's funny?
It totally wasn't for me. There was a whole club out there. The high desert is definitely one of those places that attract crazy people. Yeah. Like, you know, like Mojave Desert, like Yucca Valley area. Like, yeah. Crazies are out there, right? There's like a whole ufologist movement out there, and like all the people got together and talked about how they like had their different encounters with people from Venus.
I feel like if he charged $10,000, he'd make more money, right? Like if you're like, if this is like, this is a dome that will change humanity, and you're like $10,000.
I should flag it's on its third owner now, by the way. It's not like the original. The original dude's long gone.
It didn't work out, so they've lowered the price.
It was happening there. It
price
wasn't like just me.
Of riding the Ferris wheel. At the
well, and while I was out there, I also just started out there visited Elvis Presley's honeymoon hideout. But anyway, so meditating.
Back to monkey camp.
So bring it back to monkey camp.
Go monkey camp.
Take that ball.
Just to segue right back in.
Were you a fan of the franchise? Had you seen the?
All the pictures? I've not seen all of them. I still haven't seen all of them.
I know Matt has. I saw them all when I was a kid. You guys haven't, have you?
No, Matt's been on a
I haven't watched
them
until
lately.
Recently.
Yeah.
I saw the Tim Burton one.
Mm. Doesn't count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matt's been on a real kick lately with these because I was driving with him, and he was like, so I think this is the best sci-fi series ever made. I'm like, really, Matt? Like, the best sci-fi series ever made.
Sounds like a Matt
thing. It's a pretty Matt thing. Well, see, I thought the first one was just a classic, and then the other ones were. And then I started watching them, and they're all pretty spectacular and really, really dark and weird for very specific reasons. And since all the films are essentially pretty good, there's not that many movies that are like, okay, there's seven sci-fi films that are good at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, name another franchise that science fiction that has, like, seven good solid ones. Movies. Yeah.
Are they really all solid though?
I was pretty blown away.
Is like each a different allegory? They're completely different. This one's like nuclear.
The third one, straight up is they reverse it because every movie ends in a way that you have no idea how they're going to continue it. I mean, it's not spoilers. The second movie.
Wait, hold on, real quick. These movies are old. Just go ahead and spoil.
Yeah, fast forward to the bloop.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Bloop. The they just went right to here. They skipped 2 seconds.
No!
They're spoiled. They all die. The second movie ends with Charles Heston just being so frustrated at what's going on that he just blows up the entire Earth.
He shoots his head off.
There's like mutants that are like worshipping nuclear weapons, which is obviously the allegory of the time period, and then he just blows up the whole planet. And you're like, okay, what's the sequel? So the third movie, the apes actually go forward back in time. And the main ape characters somehow escape the explosion, and they show up in 1970. And it's a straight up like an hour and a half comedy fish out of water of like these apes surviving 1970s, and everybody's like, "Oh my god!" And they get famous, and then
that's amazing.
And then they're gonna become, and then they get pregnant, and then it becomes this one guy's like, "Dude, everybody, these apes literally have just told us that they're gonna rule the world. Like, we should fucking kill them and kill their baby." Or at the very, he's like, "No, that might be uncalled for, but we should at least kill the baby so they can't reproduce." So it becomes this weird like anti-abortion movie, and the end of it, and it ends with all the apes getting shot, including the baby who is shot on camera, riddled with bullets, and then thrown into the water. And it's a G-rated kids movie, and it ends with a baby monkey
shot on
screen.
So where do you go from
there? So then the fourth one, what happens is, this just becomes a summary of one of the apes.
That's right, you're getting it out of the way for the rest of us.
They actually switched, she switched the baby with a baby at the zoo, so it wasn't
this is bullshit. This is like Dallas or something.
That movie ends with her baby in the zoo, and it starts talking, going, "Mama, mama." You're like, "Holy shit, the baby's still..." That wasn't the smart baby. The smart baby's still there. So, of course, that smart baby grows up knowing that the humans murdered his parents. So he creates an ape uprising to destroy humanity. Yeah.
So, by the end, does it take it home back to the original?
These last movies have kind of remade those two movies. So then the
I meant like the whatever the last of the old ones before pre Tim Burton ones.
It ends with essentially being like
the fifth battle?
It ends with essentially being like, yeah, that's how the apes movie have started.
That's pretty cool. It's an Ouroboros.
Yeah,
of a
and then
series.
These movies have essentially like done like that weird like closed loop thing where It's like reset in the same way that like the Star Trek franchise is.
Wait, like really like Charlton Heston's in the first one, and he like tells like a younger
they
man,
reference
like,
it
I
in the
was
first
you.
One.
Did they really?
Yeah, they the ship Charlton Heston's ship is missing in the first one, The Rise of Planet of the Apes. But then it's a different time.
Oh,
period.
I didn't even notice that. That's great. Okay.
So how was it feel? How did it feel to be part of a classic sci-fi franchise?
What Matt Arnold considers the greatest sci-fi series,
the greatest of all time.
I was surprised. I hadn't seen them. They're all really dark and twisted. And like,
wait, you so do you include Tim Burton's?
No, in this? I don't even think
Fox does. They've abandoned that.
Yeah, they abandoned that. Yeah. Is this the first like big Hollywood movie you've been in?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
What was it like? So, I mean,
how do you audition?
Yeah, I was gonna say, what was it like
Blue
to be
Eyes, the ape in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? What is that?
Well, we were just talking about how you were drama with Kate and a bunch of our friends. We knew your drama in USC. So what was it like for the first big job to be this like mocap, like learning ape sign language? What was that
ape
like?
Camp madness. Ape camp.
Yeah, a bit of a trip, man. I mean, like it wasn't like the first thing that I'd ever done since graduating from school. I'd been working on a bunch of stuff, a lot of like guest stars and sort of smaller movies,
non-ape related stuff.
And then for this one, yeah, like the audition, everybody asked me about that. The audition, I did like 5 auditions for it. We had the first one was basically just like an acting audition, just like anything.
Oh, really?
And then the second one, what
was the actual material like? Like
it was scenes
you're an ape
from
or
like
Death of a Salesman.
Oh, really? Yeah. It was just straight up.
It was just like, can this person act? Is this an actor?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. And then our second audition, like the kind of most serious one, was like we had that guy Terry, the movement coach that I talked to you guys about. He came in and he worked with a bunch of the people that were being considered for parts, and like kind of ran us through like basically like what we were gonna do. So more of that same like you know Integratron style shit that we did. And then once at that point, then like Matt and the casting directors were like really in my corner and fighting for me. But I was such an unknown that like we had to kind of like jump through a few more hoops to make sure that I was exactly what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So I had to do like 3 more auditions.
That's nuts.
That feels so weird. They would like want a big star. It's like, well, we gotta make sure Matthew McConaughey is one of these.
Right. So we can cover up his face too.
So for the motion capture, were you just in the like a human, or was it like Congo where like you had like forearm extensions or?
Oh yeah,
crazy?
We had forearm extensions. I mean, that was like part of what Ape Camp was all about, is like learning how to use those and like learning, you know, we had these like awesome stunt dudes who were like teaching us all kinds of crazy shit with those. And then obviously that guy, Terry as well.
Does Andy Serkis show up with like this big swinging mocap dick? Just kind of like put on his crown and say,
that's
follow
added
me.
In post us.
What?
They add that in post, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. They add it.
I mean, yeah, he's like, he's
I mean,
fucking,
no, literally,
you know,
this is a huge dick.
He's like the most humble guy in the entire world. I mean, Andy's like really soft spoken, really like just super, super humble guy. He's like the coolest guy.
Is he Caesar?
I've worked with?
Yeah,
he plays Caesar.
He's the main guy.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Andy showed up, and then that was an interesting vibe actually, because like we had at that point all been working, like me and the other actors who were playing the other kind of like main character apes, and then we had the whole, you know, group of our stunt guys as well, and we were all like kind of creating this dynamic of like the tribe, you know, as it exists in the film. And then Andy has to like walk into that and basically just like take ownership of it all.
Interesting.
And he's like such a leadership figure that he just like walked in and everyone was like, oh, and like he just
just alpha milled it up like Caesar, just like slapped you, just straight up came and hit you in the face.
He just walked everyone's ass, smacking people. Yeah, he's like Patton. He just like walked in with his pearl handled revolver or whatever it was, or ivory handled revolver.
Yeah,
only pimps have pearl handled revolvers. and then just like
the funny thing about Patton on the side, it's not one to one apes and actors, right? Is it like? Mm-hmm. Is it like there's a group that are played by a smaller group of people? Like, how exactly does that work?
Yeah, so I mean, like the main kind of like character apes, so like Maurice, Rocket, Ash, Blue Eyes, and a couple of other ones were played by specific actors hired to be those parts.
Yeah.
The ones that casting and the studio were like, we really want actors for these because they've got more of an emotional arc to them, and we want to be able to show that. And we want people who have the chops to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones were played mostly by like our group of stunt guys, although we played that too. And I hesitate to call them like our group of stunt guys, because they did do a lot of sort of acting stuff as well. It wasn't like a clear division, but like for example, my buddy Scotty Lang played the character Luca, who's like the big gorilla that you see occasionally. He's kind of the muscle. And, you know, that sort of just, like, developed organically as we were going along. Like, people, you know, they realized, like, oh, this is, like, this we want to feature this character more, you know. And you know, he was, like, Scott was just the one that could do that. So he got, like, kind of put into that role.
Oh, interesting.
But then, like, when you had these big, huge filler scenes, like, we did a lot of stuff in the volume. The 3D volume is, like, what we captured, like, the accessory mocap in. Mm-hmm. The rest of it was done actually on location.
Oh, okay.
But in the volume, we did these huge scenes where you have, like, you know, all the apes running into battle and stuff like that. And we would just do pass after pass after pass. And we'd change up our character, do something a little different.
So you basically do one and be like, all right, now be something else. And
did you do that stuff on location? Or was it also, like, or was it all on stage on a green screen? Or, like, when they had, for example, like, you in the house, like,
yeah.
Was that you just, like, walking through the house?
Yeah, that was in the house. That was actually in a house. That scene was in a house in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So most of what we did was on location. That was one of the cool things about this film makes it different than you know a lot of the other things that have been done is that they managed to figure out a way through their magic to be able to shoot us on location, which was a huge help both for the authenticity and the feeling of what you're looking at, but also for us as the performers was like hugely helpful to not just be sitting in this like
giant warehouse
yeah. box and try to like just imagine shit, you know, because
a lot. You're already trying to imagine being a chimpanzee. Yeah,
like your brain's busy trying to be a chimpanzee right now.
It's like you're acting here to be a chimpanzee in a battle scene in this gray box. Good luck, have fun.
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, so it would be the same locations that they use in the film, or is like how would they?
Correct. Yeah. So we did like a lot of like all of our forest stuff was done up in Vancouver.
Yeah, it looks like.
And then we had like you know the Ape Village was like a real set. It was fucking massive. I mean, this thing was so cool. They did it. That part was shot in an abandoned Six Flags parking lot in New Orleans.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
pretty awesome. Badass. And like, dude, like it was. You would walk into the. I mean, they were like, don't ever walk into the actual theme park. We were like, fuck that. So like, we would go in there.
Yeah, we're monkeys. We fuck
you'd
that.
Like, you'd like sneak in, and there's like literally fucking alligators in the theme park. Whoa. Like, there's like a lake in the middle of the theme park, and you're like, oh, what's that? Wow. Oh, fuck, it's a gator. Like right there. And like, you know, like the old, like crusty, you know, security dudes who come out and be like, if you have marshmallows, you can feed them. Like,
why was he still there? Was he just like living in the jungle?
He just never went home.
He never went home.
The security guard.
This is my home there.
Gators. What was it like?
You can feed him marshmallows too.
Yeah.
I'll take some
twice as dangerous as a gator.
How long till you saw like the fully formed blue eyes?
Opening night.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So what was it like seeing like your eye? Like what was the most startling? Where you're like, holy shit, that's me in ape form, and those are my eyes.
No, or honestly, dude, I'm like the lamest person to ask about that because I was seriously like, in a weird way, I was like really nonplussed. Like I watched it and I was like, oh, yeah, that's about right. Like,
wait, do they actually use your eye? Like they use your eyes? Or you were using
No, because like, well, you know, when they show the comparisons, like Andy Serkis, and they show like Golem, like there's a strange, like obviously they obviously enhance it.
Because I like the idea of they airbrush just everything around his eyeballs, so the eyeballs are like
a lot of acting's in the eyes, and like this, like so I wonder if you like see yourself essentially in it, or if it's like. I don't know.
I guess the question is this: how many layers of abstraction can you place between you and your movements?
That's
and
the easier way of asking it,
right? And because essentially what you're talking about is like it is a photoreal one to one, you know, down to the musculature of the eyes and you know that sort of level of thing. And like, is that something that, like, for example, during the big battle scenes, because you'd be like, oh, that's me right there. That's me.
Oh
yeah. Across.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting.
Fully. I mean, and so. It got, it got so specific, and the people at WET are such wizards that, like, there was one point when I was doing ADR for the movie, for anybody who's listening who doesn't know what ADR is, it's alternative dialogue recording, it's like what you do when you're doing dubbing or adding lines or changing stuff, adding sound. And so when I was in the studio doing ADR, we were looking at like partially rendered scenes. It was kind of like a mix and match of like you'd have some scenes that weren't animated at all, and some scenes where you had like kind of a clunky weird version of yourself and some that were a little bit closer. And there was one scene where it was like a kind of like nearly complete animated version of myself, and it was really short. It was like me walking towards it's a scene where I drop the bag for the human character after they drop the, you know, when we first meet them, there's a bag, and I saw it and I watched like half a second of it and I was like, that's not me. and it's my character.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I was like, that's not me. And I could tell that it wasn't me that had done that, and I could actually tell who it was. I was like, that was Terry.
Whoa.
And it turned out that he had subbed in for me on a day when we were doing pickups or something because I wasn't around.
Oh, and they really?
Can, that's one of the wonders of mocap, is like you can do that really pretty easily if you need somebody and somebody knows the motion pretty well, and you got to have somebody kind of fill in. And so I could literally tell from that 2 seconds that it was not me, it was Terry. And it was pretty incredible.
Really?
Hey guys, how's it going? Jimmy Wong, aka Ted from VGHS here, telling you to check out shop.rocketjump.com. We've got brand new merchandise like iPhone cases and iPad decals to shirts, Blu-rays, and posters, including brand new Season 2 designs from our friends at Danger Brain. There's also the incredibly popular VGHS hoodie, and some of our older shirts are on sale for a great price. So make sure you check it out right after this podcast at shop.rocketjump.com. Thanks so much, guys.
In the future, let's say we get past the... We get past the
apes destroying the world.
Past the apes destroying the world.
Good luck.
And past and past like human characters looking funky in CG. Like, I mean, we're kind of steps at a time heading towards
that.
Right. Where if you could have, like, what are the actual advantages of doing, say, full CG mocap stuff? And some of the stuff we're talking about, I was like, well, maybe like concerts with dead pop stars, like Elvis is going to do a concert.
Like, wanting to be younger looking.
Well, younger looking, so if you're an older actor. But then you're like, okay, what if Harrison Ford got really old and then he was acting like a Han Solo version, CG version of himself? Like, would he just look like Han Solo but moving like an 80-year-old? Like, there's all these weird questions all of a sudden. We're just like, I wonder. And I think probably and one of the things that I think we settled on was, I think one of the things that would like make sense financially in a world like this would be like, if you wanted to get like a child actor to do something.
Yeah, to replace child actors.
Like to replace like a 12-year-old to do something really physical, or to do like, you know, jumping around or something that you would just wouldn't have like a real 12-year-old be unable to do.
Sure. Something dangerous or something.
You can maybe do that and do...
So you're saying with a fully rendered CG character, not based on a performance.
Oh, no, I was
like, mocap it. You'd have to mocap it
off of... You sub it in for a stunt guy or something.
Right, or something like that.
I feel like the only problem with that, though, is I feel like what would happen is you would definitely avoid having, like, bad child performances.
Yeah.
Right? But a child performance is either just, like, the child's not a very good actor, it's just kind of an awkward, stilted thing.
Whoa, something just blew my mind. I just got a thought.
Go.
I'm going to... Not to derail us here for a second. But I just got the idea, like, what if you had a... If you had one character that was played by 5 different people... So you have this really mercurial, strange character.
I think
and
there's
it's
a movie about
changing.
Happiness, is it? What's the movie where it's like the same character?
Well, they did Bob Dylan with different actors. That's different. But they just look
no,
like
no, no.
Different.
There's the other one. It's the person who did Happiness. Benji's going to maybe look it up. But it's the same character played by like a 12-year-old boy and like a 30-year-old woman. And
that was interesting. But imagine it looks exactly the same.
But then from scene to scene, you know, I mean, it was
that'd be really interesting.
Split personality or something like that. And then all of a sudden you're seeing them just like their mannerisms are changing. And if it's photoreal, I mean, if it's perfect and flawless, you're going to just notice these little tiny things that are going to be so uncanny.
It'll be really interesting because that's like it really cuts down to like how much of our personalities come through in our physicality and our just what little tiny movements are enough to be like, oh, that's this person, or it's like, oh, well, something's different about this person.
Well, that's what I was kind of fascinated about, just like the idea of acting this whole movie. I mean, seeing behind the scenes, I'm sure, is probably amazing, but I feel like so much of this probably comes both from TV, but I just think cinematic language in general, like actors don't, and you came from theater, right? So you did a lot of stage. Yeah. I feel like a lot of actors, it's a totally different thing to act on camera than it is on stage, and movement is like completely lost. Like you'll see a lot of comparisons between like take You Got Mail and compare like the way they shoot a scene to the original Shop Around the Corner. It's like full shots, like Jimmy Stewart's like doing incredible body performance, all his body language. Movies nowadays, it's a close up, it's all face acting, and you essentially were doing an entire movie that was acting entirely with your body the whole time. And and was that like, I don't know. Was it like, did you ever think like, okay,
well,
I'm just
a
human, I'm not thinking about
But also like, this is a close up. I need to be subtler, or is it like a weird theater thing where it's like, everything is being captured. So now as an actor, I have to move. Right. I mean, it's like, cause I know that's like, so for example, not to keep asking the question, but like, you know, some of our actors are like, yeah, well, it's a close up. It's a different performance because I know where the camera is versus a medium versus a wide, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of a harder question for me to answer, I think, because so much of what I try to do, personally at least, is to get all that shit out of my head. So, like, mm-hmm. I try to make all of that as secondary to what I'm actually trying to experience as I possibly can. Mm. You know, so, like, maybe at first I would have given that stuff a lot more thought, you know, considering, like, how close the camera is and stuff and how much I'm going to limit my performance or just move the energy of it maybe to a different place. But I think now that I've been doing this for a little while anyway, it's gotten more to a point where I'm not really thinking about that stuff as much. I'm more just trying to
act well.
Well, react,
focus, man. I'm just out there trying to act here.
Well, but react and be in the moment and sure. be authentic yeah, to that exactly. every single time.
Yeah, sure. And like a lot of it also is about playing off of like the energy that you can kind of just feel, you know, in the room and what you're doing. So, for example, that scene, which is to be honest, like that's the biggest scene that I have in that movie, is the scene with Caesar in the house and we're sitting there on the couch and it's a very intimate, very close scene, and you know, Andy has so much more experience than I do, and he's such a brilliant performer that like makes my job so easy, because then all I got to do is just get the hell out of the way and surrender to what he's doing and just say like, okay, I'm going to ride that energy. I'm going to bring my own shit to it, but I'm really just going to listen to how big is he being? How much is he showing? How much is he doing? And, you know, it's almost like you having a conversation with anybody, you know, you feel that energy that starts to exist in a good conversation. You just kind of ride it. And that was kind of what that was for me, you know? I guess it could have led me heinously wrong, you know? I go in there and it's just huge.
I wonder, like, it must be such a weird thing to be like, to direct something like this, because it's like,
yeah,
we need to make an adjustment performance. Okay, as a monkey, it's like, how would you even begin to formulate the words to like describe what you're going for? Because there's so many layers, again, of abstraction between what's going on in front of you and what will eventually show up on
the
screen.
Do you ever think, like, as a chimpanzee, or is it just how am I experiencing this as a character?
Oh, no, it was how you experienced it as a character. I mean, so I was like poking fun at like what Terry was doing with us up in Vancouver, but honestly, like that was hugely instrumental, because what we were doing is we were changing the way that we were thinking, changing the way that we were experiencing the world, so that it wasn't just adding layers of movement and learning how to move and stuff. It was learning how to change the way that we were thinking.
So from the ground up almost.
Yeah. So that again, like then in the moment, the answers are all there, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not having to think about, oh, how do I react to this? You know, you just feel, oh, how am I reacting to this as River, which was the name of my character when we were filming it, which got changed later to Blue Eyes. I wondered why. But, you know, so you're not thinking like, oh, how would I do this as a chimpanzee or a gorilla or whatever. You're just, you know, it's in your body.
Well, it's a little bit like, I think learning foreign languages, there's an interesting interim period as you're learning a foreign language where you are actually learning it through your native tongue. So it's like, I took German for a while, but what I did was it would be, you step through English on the way over there. So like, okay, this means this. Okay, so as you're translating it, you're going from word to English to meaning. You know, and also in a similar way, music is, you know, when you're like learning a new instrument, you're, for a while, like guitar, like I would, it would go through piano. Like I'd be like, okay, this is this note on the piano now to meaning in my head.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it's sort of similar in the terms of what you're talking about, like, from a whole perspective in terms of character. It's like you're going from, you're removing that middle layer of your current experience as a translation sort of layer to get straighter to like the direct side of things, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And for anybody who doesn't now feel super untalented.
So when I was learning another language, and then, you know, just like moving from piano to guitar.
If it makes you feel any better, he's terrible at all those things.
I've never heard him speak German. Yeah. No, but he is, to be fair, he's good at pretty much every instrument, though.
So did you actually get to meet any sort of monkeys? Like, during? I'm surprised nobody's
like
asked this
monkeys?
Yet.
During
monkey camp, did you get to actually meet a monkey?
Not like, one.
So even, to this day, you've never met a chimp?
I met chimps, I think, before when I was like younger in zoos, but to be honest,
like never formally.
Did they show you footage? Were you trying to mimic
them?
Yeah,
I mean,
but you never got to like animators. They bring like lions in. The animators do live drawings. I'm surprised they didn't like bring in a chimp for you to like hang out with for a few days.
Just, yeah, like, I mean, I would have been probably not so cool with that. Like I,
they're dangerous animals.
No, not for that reason at all. But like I don't. That's the reason I never went to a zoo. That's the reason I never went to do any of that stuff. Is it's like I mean, number one, these are not exactly chimps. These are our own kind of elevated, changed chimpanzees.
Yeah.
That they're not. We're not trying to make real chimps. Mm-hmm. But the other reason, just being that, like, that shit depresses me, and I think it's like a really bad byproduct of what we're doing to the planet. So, like, I don't, you know, like that. That's like
that could have been Ferris. Like, he spends like 3 weeks talking about how to think about a majestic animal, and then just like drag one in on the corner. Look at this creature now.
Throwing bananas.
And
at him,
and the second thing I'm surprised nobody else has asked is, have you ever met one of the monkeys from Congo yet? Like,
from Congo.
I was about to ask that, to be fair. So.
Were the stuntmen, was there any stuntmen who's like, man, I was an ape on Congo like 15 years ago, 20 years ago? Like,
No. I don't know. I would never mention that.
Can we stop for a second? I love that. Logan's question that he was, quote, surprised.
Nobody else asked.
Surprised that nobody asked.
Why did nobody talk about Congo yet?
When's the last time anybody here has seen Congo?
I probably saw it like a few months ago.
Of course. That's what he's talking about.
Probably first 5-10 minutes. And then
fresh in his mind. Yeah. Congo.
There's some cool creature effects in Congo.
There's a bunch of stuntmen who play monkeys in there, right? Yeah. And there's also actually like a child gorilla, you know, who has to do the sign language. What was her name? Amy or whatever?
Nobody knows.
Why would you throw that to us as if we would know?
It was on Netflix for a while.
It's on Netflix. You all probably should have seen
Delta
it.
In like 8 performances through the years. Like,
like a history of 8 performances.
She get an 8 panel. Like, where we do, like, apes through the ages. Like, we got some good alliteration.
Teach an entire class at USC. Casper could teach an entire class.
Well, like, you got, like, mocap ape. You get, like, the Congo suit ape. Maybe, like, a stop-motion ape. If we can find somebody from, like, the original King Kong, or at least Mighty Joe Young. Mm-hmm. And then we could also do, like, gorilla in suit.
Mighty Joe Young, that's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah,
like Rick Baker classic. In a suit.
There's Rick Baker in a suit.
1976
He doesn't even bother with moving like an ape. He's literally just a dude in a suit just milling about miniatures.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, just the thought.
Mighty Joe Young. That's all I'm thinking about now.
Which one? The old one or the new one?
The new one. What's the best like 90s animal movie?
Dunstan Chokes.
Or no, 2000s.
No, I don't know.
What's the one where it's every Which Way But Loose? What's the one where it's Clint Eastwood in an ape?
Oh, the one with Clint Eastwood in an ape.
Isn't Every Way Which Way But Loose?
I don't know. Benji, I haven't seen that.
IMDb,
a Clint Eastwood movie.
He's gone.
He's
weird. Wrestling on his screen.
What
now.
Am I looking up? Foreign Objects?
No. What is this? It was a movie. Clint Eastwood and an ape.
But there's another
that's
one.
90s animal movie.
What told you.
Every Which Way But Loose. You gotta use the watch.
Oh. Let's talk about Google Watch.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So, wasn't there also one with who's the chubby guy from Seinfeld?
George Costanza
and a monkey's another movie.
What is that one?
He goes to like a resort and he's trying to like hit on like a single mom, but the monkey's just
ruining it.
This
is like the audio version of somebody trying to figure out something on IMDb. That's what the last 2 months have been. What's that movie? That's Thrilling Radio.
Logan's just right there with the answers, by the way, everybody. Yeah.
George Costanza. We should find that one.
What did you write down? What did you write down on your pad over there?
So, meet a monkey.
It says Congos.
meet a monkey. Make sure you didn't forget that one. Mid conversation. Meet a monkey. Great. What was the other thing?
You literally wrote down on your pad of paper as a question to ask. Meet a monkey.
The whole time you were talking about acting all these interesting, fascinating things, you were sitting there listening to
me like, make sure, with you, like, make sure to ask him. Yeah. I just was like glazed over.
Probably one of the like deepest conversations we've had.
Probably like the only intelligent conversation we've had on this podcast. And he's just like, I gotta make sure I remember to ask. Yes.
You know, and I'm also astounded. Meet a monkey. None of these fucks are talking about Congo.
What else is on there? There's more than just meet a monkey.
If I had a bajillion dollars, Logan, I would put you through monkey camp, and I would love to see the monkey version of you.
I bet it's cheaper than that.
I mean, you can go to the Vortex in the desert for $20.
I'll build a curriculum. You pay me for a week, and I'll just do monkey camp on my own with my own curriculum.
Oh my gosh!
No, the other thing we were going to talk about—it probably won't be relevant by the time this comes out—but DashCon, the Tumblr convention.
You on Tumblr?
No, I'm not.
You on Tumblr?
Are you on Twitter?
You on Tumblr, bro?
No, I'm not on Tumblr. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram. I'm on Facebook.
Tumblr is like I guess it's an image like
sum
blog,
up Tumblr
right?
For
reblog.
Us, Logan. Yeah,
I'd say it's like a reblog site. So like people reblog the different GIFs.
What does that mean?
When you see a good GIF, you
What's
say, "I want to spread this GIF some more, please."
What's a GIF?
GIF is a graphic image format, and it refers to...
Sorry, stop.
Huh?
Graphical interchange format.
No.
No. But- Nice try, Fred. Nice try.
Nice try.
Phone's coming out.
All right.
You gotta anyway, watch. Continue. You gotta find out.
But I guess Tumblr did a had a convention. I feel like Freddie knows more. And I just heard it went disastrously, horrendously wrong. What does that mean, though?
Well, they crowdfunded it too.
So they crowdfunded this convention for people. It's a convention for literally people who blog things. Okay. And like, oh, let's get them all together. And it's like there's these fandoms that show up on it. So like a lot of Doctor Who fans and a lot of Night Vale fans.
Yeah,
and
it was like Night Vale. Like,
what's Night Vale?
It's a podcast that does
spooky stories.
Spooky stories. It's actually kind of cool.
Why aren't we doing some spooky stories? Let's eat into that.
Let's do it.
Do you have a spooky story?
You want to start?
I'll prep one.
Start a spooky story.
All right, next week, everybody. Spooky story.
Well, I
want
to start one right now.
Okay.
like sort of a, what are those? Like an exquisite corpse, like where we each say a word and try to make it spooky.
Sure, let's do it.
The
only
ghost in
the awesome.
That's such
this
a
is how
keep going. Why
yeah,
are you
shut
doing
up,
it?
Brady, don't be a bitch.
Shipwreck.
The only ghost in the awesome shipwreck.
Decided. Fastly quickly.
One word.
To
dance
upon
his grave.
Naked.
Then.
Was that the end or
yeah,
then?
I made it one word though, so to follow the rules.
The end.
And that's how you make a shitty story, folks.
All right. Wait. Nick, say that sentence. Spooky.
But I don't even remember what the
sentence
was.
What was the sentence?
Here's what I think. I think next time we should come back each with our own 10-word spooky story.
And see.
Wait,
what was the comments? The comments have to come up with a better 10. What was our 10-word story?
It was
the only ghost in the awesome shipwreck.
Awesome shipwreck.
Decided to dance
on his grave.
On his own grave,
naked.
Quick, naked. The end.
Quickly. It was quickly, fastly decided.
Fastly, quickly.
On his own grave.
Fastly,
the spooky ghost.
Yeah, but we should really.
One story that I have is about like the American public education system. It just made me say fastly quickly.
Fastly quickly.
I'm listening. I'm listening right now to this is going to show you a little bit about my home life. I'm listening to an audiobook of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility right now, and I'm just thinking about like the poor sad state that the world is in when it used to be like just this elegant grammar and speech, and English has this gorgeous language, and now it's come to this.
I think we should try to make some really spectacular little short
stories.
Well, look, I think we wrote a pretty good. I mean, look, it's no.
Let's
baby
do.
Shoes.
Do we have a prompt?
Maybe we can do
a prompt for next time. Can we get like a prompt?
No, it should just be the scariest story you can write in one sentence.
Yeah, I'm just going to crib mine off Twitter. But
you can't use semicolons and commas.
What?
Can't use grammar?
There has to be one independent clause, you guys. No conjunction.
You can't use semicolons.
I like Ray's like you can't use commas in our spooky ghost story. That's one sentence.
Apostrophes and dashes only.
No commas or
E's.
Wait,
so what happened with this dash con?
Anyway, so dash cons happened.
Who cares?
Nobody cares.
It was a total disaster. It's incredible.
There we go. That's pretty exciting.
Because it's a Tumblr convention.
What does that mean, though?
Nobody cares. When everyone showed up, all the organizers said, okay, so the hotel's going to kick us out if we don't get $17,000 from you guys. And like one person in the back was like, Dad, don't you usually prepay for conventions? But meanwhile, but he couldn't be heard over the cacophony of everybody pulling out their wallets and paying money to the organizer.
The main thing was that Night Vale was really uncomfortable with this, and that was like the only real like panel they left. So then to make up for the fact that their main panel left, they opened up a ball pit. And this ball pit, I shit you not, fits four people, and there's incredible pictures of this massive like ballroom and this ball pit alone just sitting there, and they literally were like, you have 5 minutes at a time.
No, but because
whoever
they left.
And if you were signed up for the Night Vale panel, you get an hour in the ball pit. And it's literally a line, and there's just people sitting in the ball pit just looking at the camera.
Now what am I
pissed off? It's pretty incredible. That was amazing. And so he made a video game called the Dashcom Simulator, and he is a first-person shooter where you can walk around this empty room and just jump in the ball pit.
I think this is wonderful. I think we should all care about this. This is great.
It throws black text at you saying, like, extended use of the ball pit will be $10,000. Yeah. But my favorite sentence, and we'll wrap it up with this, my favorite sentence that to ever come out of almost anything, out of the coverage.
That's a very bad thing to say.
But this is a quote from a Daily Dot article about DashCon. Quote, footage of the fundraising announcement when they were asking for $17,000 shows convention organizers soliciting donations from a crowded ballroom of Tumblr users, many of whom hand over cash and then break into song while performing the three-fingered salute from the Hunger Games.
Interesting. So pretty sad.
That's what happens when the internet shows up at the Marriott LAX ballroom.
It was in Illinois.
Third floor, sorry.
It was in Illinois.
Even worse.
Wow.
Anyway, all right. Anyway, I think we've well overstayed our welcome as usual. So thank you, Nick, for
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
Nick.
Thanks for your movie.
Legit. Congratulations.
Well, it seems like we've crossed paths.
Is there a video yet for these things?
What are these? Okay. There's three cameras on the other side of the room.
We should. Could you like sign off as Blue Eyes and then have one of your interns like try to like use poses to do a monkey?
Our interns will do what is
go okay,
$4 million per second.
Who owns Poser now? Macro Media?
It's their own company.
Macro Media Poser 95. Open it up and you can mocap over him like a little waving Blue Eyes.
No, we're not doing that.
I would
totally do that, and I would even stand. I'll fucking stand on this table right now and do
I would love that.
Hey, okay. Can I get this mic? Can I carry this mic?
Just have to speak.
Just yell.
Just yell loud.
All
right. I'll turn this mic towards you so we can hear you.
If that's how we're gonna sign off, let's throw out your Twitter first so everyone can go follow you afterwards.
You're not even on social media. And I don't have a Tumblr now. And the very thought of having a Tumblr depresses me.
Now.
Charlie's going nuts.
But the scary story that we just had will be posted on Night Vale's Tumblr soon. So you can check it out there.
All right, hopefully this table doesn't break.
Over beers.
Charlie, you're in the way.
Good luck.
Oh, there's a dog.
Yeah! Awesome. Thank you, Nick.
All right, thanks, Nick.
That shit. Somebody does.
Harmon, pleasure. Get on it.
That was
Nick's Blue Eyes. You can see him in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Thank you, everybody. Alex Point Blue Studios for recording and mixing this madness. Benji, podcast producer. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.